Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I'm going to cover two verses this morning. Text 27. And then the combined 28-29. Rajasthama prakritya samashira bhajanti vai pitributa pajeshadim shri aishvaya pajepshavaha. Those who are in the mode of passion and ignorance worship the forefathers, other living beings, and the demigods who are in charge of the cosmic activities, for they are urged by a desire to be materially benefited with women, wealth, power, and progeny. Prabhupada's purport. There is no need to worship demigods of whatsoever category if one is serious about going back to Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:20 and 23, it is clearly said that those who are mad after material enjoyment approach the different demigods for temporary benefits which are meant for men with a poor fund of knowledge. One should never desire to increase the depth of material enjoyment. Material enjoyment should be accepted only up to the point of the bare necessities of life, and not more or less than that. To accept more material enjoyment means to bind oneself more and more to the miseries of material existence. More wealth, more women, and false aristocracy are some of the demands of the materially disposed man because he has no information of the benefit derived from Vishnu worship. By Vishnu worship, one can derive benefit in this life as well as in life after death. Forgetting these principles, foolish people who are after more wealth, more wives, more children, worship various demigods. The aim of life is to end the miseries of life and not to increase them. Then, this next paragraph, Prabhupada's italicizing one sentence. For material enjoyment, there is no need to approach the demigods. The demigods are but servants of the Lord. As such, they are duty-bound to supply necessities of life in the form of water, light, air, etc. The italicized phrase. One should work hard and worship the Supreme Lord by the fruits of one's hard labor for existence, and that should be the motto of life. Prabhupada italicized that. One should be careful to execute occupational service with faith in God in the proper way, and that will gradually lead one on the progressive march back to Godhead. Final paragraph, Lord Sri Krishna, when he was personally present at Vrajadham, stopped the worship of the demigod Indra and advised the residents of Vraja to worship by their business and to have faith in God. Worshipping the multi-demigods for material gain is practically a perversity of religion. It's not a popular statement. There it is. This sort of religious activity has been condemned in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam as Kaitava Dharma. There is only one religion in the world to be followed by one and all, and that is Bhagavat Dharma, or The religion which teaches one to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and no one else. Cover the points here. Here's this inclusive and exclusive, including one and excluding everyone else as objects of worship. And in doing so, as there's a tendency for fruitive workers to work very hard, this is striving with ardent endeavor is a symptom of devoted passion. So, for worshipping Vishnu, one should work hard and worship the Supreme Lord by the fruits of one's hard labor for existence, and that should be the motto of life. So this is Karma Yoga. It's not the highest platform of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's certainly, it's addressing this fruitive tendency, which has been pointedly one of the themes of our weekend's discussion. How to engage in devotional selfless devotional service without fruitive taint. I'm rendering some service because I have an expectation. I have a want that needs to be fulfilled. And if that want doesn't get fulfilled, I'm dry. Disappointed. So, and what is that work, endeavor, that's done without a purpose behind it? What's that? That state of activity that has no purposes, meaning it means no selfish purpose. In discussing this idea of desirelessness, or you know, selflessness, Prabhupada's explanation is that our desire is not to become a dead stone. He speaks, there is a stone. Do we desire to become a dead stone? Lifeless stone? Where there's life, there's desire. To become desireless means to become dead stone. You know how we go back and forth on the points that you just drill it home. That is not life. Life means there is desire. Desire is concomitant with the soul, with life. So desireless means to make our desire one with the desire of the Supreme. Inseparable, that kind of oneness, the inseparable feature of love, where the beloved's desire is my desire. And it's not with the mercantile mentality that when I do like that, I'm going to get back a whole lot. That's the fruitive mentality. I'm going to get back. I'm going to get to, for me. Because really that's the center of existence after all, is me. And what's for me is what's important. So, the selfless position is a God-centered position, a love of God position. Where there's full sex, self-sacrifice, that's what real love is. And that's a desire. Both the desire to love and the desire to be loved. But there, we won't experience being loved without giving love. Even if it's there, we won't experience it. And that's, this is sort of the theme that I want to speak about this afternoon. We'll come back to this. I'll just touch on it as a theme. Faith, mercy, and gratitude is the topic. So, mercy is receiving and gratitude is what you give back. And there's, for that to happen in a pure and Krishna conscious way, there has to be faith in the object of love. In Krishna. Krishna's real. What comes from Krishna is real. It's meant for me. It's very personal. It's coming in a loving manner for the sake of the relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada writes in this next purport. Right at the beginning, the next verse, Vasudeva para deda, Vasudeva para maka, Vasudeva para yoga, Vasudeva para kriya. In case it's not clear yet, Vasudeva param jnanam, Vasudeva param tapaha, Vasudeva para dharma, Vasudeva para patihi. Three times is absolute, and this is eight times. So it's the inclusive, exclusive, and exclusive. Inclusive, Krishna's. So the object. Prabhupada writes in that next report that Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is the only object of worship, is confirmed in these two slokas. In Vedic literature, there is the same objective. Establishing one's relationship and ultimately reviving our lost loving service unto Him. He's included those as two functions. They're not separate and distinct, but there's a division. Establishing, just like we may establish a relationship. There are some persons here who some of you haven't met before and you're getting to know one another, so you're establishing a relationship. And then beyond the establishing of a relationship are the activities of that loving exchange in a relationship. And so with Krishna, the establishing of a relationship, it's a relationship that already exists, but is forgotten or covered by time and dull consciousness and attention that's been turned away from Krishna. And heaps and piles of rubbish that goes along with all of that. All kinds of unwanted rubbish that really keeps us busy. So busy we don't have time for our relationship. We're too busy with fixing problems and trying to go a little higher in the enjoyment realm. No time for a relationship with Krishna. So establishing the relationship means re-establishing. But then establishing relationship is, for us in practical terms, is like beginning devotional service, beginning Vaishnava Sangha. But beyond that is the deeper affairs of service and the moods of love that we want to experience and give in our relation, in our service, in our relationship with Krishna. More and more and more and more. Don't sit right at the door. In the Vedic literature, there is the same objective, establishing one's relationship, and ultimately reviving a lost, loving service unto Him. So there's the receiving, and then there's the giving. The giving with deep gratitude. Even, you know, in a very fundamental way. I don't want to give this afternoon's class now, but just so you get the sense of the theme. It's the emotional content that the consciousness behind the activities that we render, as opposed to performing in a mechanical fashion, or performing even in a dutiful fashion. Bhaktivedanta Thakur teaches that duty and love are on a different platform. Goodness is duty. I do something because it ought to be done. That's goodness. And I do because not only I choose to do, but I'm compelled to do because of, I don't even have to think about it, because of spontaneous attraction of a loving relationship. Impelled by love, rather than impelled by discrimination, right and wrong. So I do what is right, because it, doing what is right. Doing what is right, the actions in the mode of goodness are meant to lead us to that loving relationship. Establishing a loving relationship is making the commitment to abide by some teaching, like Prabhupada describes. Religion, one definition, religion is codes or laws given by God. That's what religion is. A religious person is one who abides by those codes. Religious. I do it because I'm obliged to do it. It's a law. It's given by God, I should do it. Do it. Obedient. Establishing relationship. Obedience. There's the master, and there's the servant. And being obedient, I'm acknowledging God. Then establishing the activities of love. So it's the emphasis I want to make here, so the consciousness behind it. That's this afternoon's discussion. Here, there's this back again to inclusive and exclusive. Devotional service is exclusive. Rupa Goswami writes in Nectar of Devotion. Love is exclusive. Now fortunately, if one develops love for God, then that exclusivity includes all parts and parcels. One who develops love for God develops love for all living entities. But it's on the principle of placing attention upon the absolute truth, that from which everything else comes, the source of sarva karana karana, source of everything. And then everything comes from that source. So you love the source, you love everything. It's very practical. Try to love everything, you go nuts. One devotee asked Prabhupada, when chanting, should we be thinking of the welfare of all living beings? And Prabhupada replies, you cannot think of all living beings. It's not possible. You don't have the capacity to think of all living beings or to speak of the welfare of all living beings. So just think of Krishna. Then automatically the concern for the welfare of all living beings will be there. Thank you very much. Krishna consciousness means Krishna consciousness. Focusing attention upon Krishna while we're doing our services for Krishna's parts and parcels, knowing that Krishna will be pleased. This is the selfless service standard. And so it's exclusive. At the same time, then when genuinely that connection is made, then universal brotherhood becomes possible. You know how Prabhupada deals with this universal brotherhood idea in Vishopanishad. He blasts it. Nonsense. Bhaktisiddhanta is stronger. It's one of the most serious oppositions to connecting with God is thinking that mana seva bhagavan seva. You serve all the leaves and branches, and that way you serve the tree. Or that the religious person is the one who does philanthropy and altruism. And if you don't do philanthropy and altruism, what kind of person are you? What kind of religion is this? Well, sir, we're pouring water on the root. Well, that's very nice, you're pouring water on the root. What about the leaves and the branches? Oh, you're doing some leaves and branches work. Very good. That's this phrase here. One should be careful to execute occupational service with faith in God in the proper way. So in the proper way, it has several areas of concern. In the proper way means in the right consciousness. That means that while I'm doing my occupational duties, well, you know, you all have occupational, you have your careers, and then there's a broader sense of occupational duties. It's, you know, what you do. Not only from 9 to 5, it's what you do all the time. That's an occupational duty. So, in Krishna consciousness, then another dimension of this, in the proper way, with faith in God, is expressed in terms of the nivritti pravritti idea. That not for the accumulation of more stuff, more objects, more money, more enjoyment, more women, more fame, more, that kind of motivation. That's not love. And one can worship Krishna with the explicit idea, or one can worship Krishna, one can worship God with the explicit idea that this is a very good investment. I give one amount to Krishna, he gives 10 amounts back to me. Very high return. Very good investment. And it's not going, the stocks aren't going to ever fall. It's always going to be up there. High rating. Triple A. Or whatever they call it. Blue chip or something. Great. Investment. So, this is just a little anecdote here. There's the Kanishtha Adhikari mentality is one comes before the deity and offers prayers and puts something in the hundi box and goes away thinking, you know, now I'm going to have a successful day. There's one man, really funny man. He comes once a week, but not always the same day of the week in New York. And he's oblivious to the morning Bhagavatam class that's going on. He has all these plastic bags that are always really noisy. And he comes in, really just, you know, clears his throat and huffs and he's a very heavy, you know, overweight guy. Huffs and puffs as he comes right through where the devotees are sitting and being between them and the speaker and just goes right to the altar. Takes all these things out of his bag, makes all this racket, puts them on the altar, and stands with folded hands, makes audibly loud prayers, all the classes going on, pays his obeisances 5 times, goes and takes Charanamrita to make sure that he makes a bunch of noise with the spoon. And, you know, it's like we weren't even there. That's Kanishtha Adhikari. Deity worship is everything, and devotees, you know, that's nice. They're doing have a class, or whatever that is, and I'm going to worship deity. And I want to have a successful week, and I'm going to bring things to offer to the Lord, Thakur. We just smile because, you know, this man, you can't instruct him. He's in his own space. But so there's certainly a mentality that I give to Krishna because I get back. And it's explicit. I've had many students describe that when I was young, I would go religiously to the temple just before and just after exams. Because that was the force. Achieve. Be religious so you can achieve. So that mentality isn't culturally distinct in some part of the world. It's part of the material condition. There are those that don't worship, and they're the unregulated fruitive workers. And then there are those that worship, and they worship with the faith that I'm going to get more. I'm the better worker because I'll have that punya connected to my endeavors. So that's another in the right way, with faith in God. I don't need to go to my mother and say, Mommy, will you feed me? Please. Mothers like to feed their children. The child doesn't have to ask. The child may cry, indicating that they're hungry. But, you know, so we don't have to ask Krishna for our things. He wants to give us our things. But he wants us to understand, because it's here in scripture, it's from this same chapter, that one should not even carry in one's heart the desire for more than what one requires. Having that desire, and not less, and not more. So, first from this chapter, one should accept, just like in Isha Upanishad, accept those things that are for your necessity. And I pondered many times, what does that mean, necessity? Because one man's necessity might be another person's excess, and a third person's depravity. So, Krishna allows for that. We have different necessities. But as our consciousness becomes more Krishna connected, our quote necessities diminish. We don't need. Need is so that we can peacefully go on doing our service. But, you know, like how many chapatis can you eat? And how many sets of clothes can you wear? So it's not that we need to go to excesses, but it's a principle that if there's something that you don't need, you do without it. Like if there's some expenditure, before you make the expenditure, you let some time pass and don't really need this expenditure. And if it's something that's for service, then you do it. But you're cautious to become a grihanadi. You just gather things and gather things and gather things. And they just sit around and don't use them. So don't acquire them or give them away when you realize you don't really need it. Or I don't need it anymore. Let me just give to someone who can use it nicely. Anyway, back to the theme is the purpose of worship is not so that you can get stuff or get enjoyment, material enjoyment. That's pravritti marg. Increasing material enjoyment through the medium of worship. The Bhagavatam is, from the very beginning, teaching nivritti, the path of decreasing material enjoyments in favor of, and deliberately doing so, in favor of strengthening the unrestricted, uncluttered relationship, unclouded relationship with Krishna. Meaning, the relationship with Krishna is simply to serve Him, simply to please Him. And necessities He'll take care of, I don't need to worry about it. So, establishing one's relationship with the Supreme Lord, and ultimately reviving our lost loving service unto Him. Our svarup, our spiritual form, our spiritual identity, our spiritual position of eternal loving service. That's what the message of this 28-29 are. And Prabhupada writes that in the sum and substance of the Vedas. In the Bhagavad Gita, the same theory is confirmed by the Lord in His own words. The ultimate purpose of the Vedas is to know Him only. All the revealed scriptures are prepared by the Lord through His incarnation in the body of Srila Vyasadeva just to remind the fallen souls conditioned by material nature of Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. No demigod can award freedom from material bondage. That is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. Impersonalists who have no information of the personality of Godhead minimize the omnipotency of the Supreme Lord and put him on equal footing with all other living beings. And for this act, such impersonalists get freedom from material bondage only with great difficulty. They can surrender unto him only after many, many births in a culture of transcendental knowledge. So this is, again, on the theme of ultimate liberation. Dharmasya hi apavargasya. Narto tayopakalpate. The same message as from the early in the chapter. It's now expanding that message. The purpose of Dharma is ultimate liberation. It never should be taken up for the purpose of artha, of economic development. So this is smashing that Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha model. Sledgehammer. The purpose of Dharma, the Bhagavat Dharma, is the ultimate, not just liberation, but the connection with the Personality of Godhead, ultimate liberation. Sake of not carrying on too long. I think the other thing, under next time, you can remind me, we'll continue with this purport because it goes on for some pages. 28-29. I think our questions and answer session has been pretty robust, so I think I'll stop here and see if we have some discussion. Yeah.
Is consciousness behind an activity and the emotion behind an activity one and the same?
No. The emotion is a subset of consciousness. So it's like, say, I could have the consciousness of loving Krishna, and then there's varieties of emotions that are connected with that love for Krishna.
Be that the emotion is something, but the consciousness is actually something less, because emotion is a product of the mind.
Well, the material emotions, yes. Spiritual emotions, it's of the soul. And there's within the soul, or of the soul, is there's a spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence, spiritual ego. But the material components are separated. Vina prakriti arshtada. So, don't use your college brain and push it further. You know, how does these things subdivide in the spiritual world? And don't go there. It's in the science of rasa, it's just described that the soul is the seat of one's constitutional rasa and its experience. So we can say that's where is that its experience in the spiritual mind, but it's experience of the soul. And there's not that distinction like there is in this material realm. I don't want to go any further than that.
Maharaj, you were saying that obedience in accepting the relationship with Supreme Lord, you were talking about something like obedience, one has to be obedient.
I recall that, yeah. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure you're repeating me correctly. That's why I'm squinting.
So, is this obedience comes from knowledge or just out of?
Sure. And trust. Faith. at least preliminary things. There can be obedience that has its degree of misconception too. Ignorance, not knowledge. I can faithfully do something foolish, not based on knowledge, based on again, not again. But I think the again is again. So we can make that kind of distinction. But at least something that I apprehend to be knowledge. Yeah.
Because I also used to do this, all this exam demigod worship. So I used to feel like I'm obedient to this God and
Well, there's knowledge according to the modes of nature, right? So what kind of, that's knowledge in the mode of passion. It's some kind of knowledge, obedience, based on knowledge in the mode of passion. I've just made some distinction that there's knowledge in the mode of goodness that's not a product of the modes of nature, but a product of something that's given by God. Dharma, Visakshat, Bhagavat, Pranitam, that kind of knowledge. People write messages then. Shy, I guess. How does one gain faith in the principle that one can't realize Krishna on one's own, but need to take shelter of those who have realized? That's easy. Try it. Alone. Sincerely. I mean, not necessarily belligerently, but just, you know, like an ordinary person would do. Like one has approached accomplishing material objectives. Like, you know, try to drive a car, or try to, you know, pass an exam, or try to, you know, cook a sabji or something like that. You know, you learn something, and then you practice at that something, you become good at that something, you become the master of that something. But spiritual life doesn't work like that. This has different rules. One who sincerely try to chant with full attention. Really try, and you realize, I can't do this alone. Krishna! It just has different set of rules. It's a loving relation, the rule of loving relationships. I can't do it alone. That's the best. I mean, one can understand, if one's first class intelligent, one can understand just from hearing it. Okay, I accept. But we're very conditioned souls. We're used to just, you know, karta hamiti manyate. We're used to that program. And so Krishna makes it just, well, he makes sure it doesn't happen that way. It just doesn't happen that way in spiritual life. It happens by the combination of descending mercy and endeavor. Regarding yesterday's questions on complacency, what keeps a devotee always going forward without feeling complacent or contented with their achievements? That's a nice question. there's a few things that my experience of this kind of thing is that one component or one approach to not becoming complacent and being satisfied with one's achievements is the understanding, like not so much intellectual understanding, but like intuitive understanding, that devotional service is about service. Devotional service is not about achieving. Devotional service is service. Like Jiva Goswami writes in his Bhakti Sandarbha, there's a stage before spontaneous loving service, where one simply enjoys serving. So the being fixed and being with great transcendental emotion inspired to be connected to Krishna in loving service, that stage isn't reached, but one in a preliminary position, just like serving. And so they serve and 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 they serve, and it doesn't matter what the condition is. If they're the superior, they're subordinate, if they're honored, they're dishonored, they're happy, there's distress, they're serving and serving and serving and serving and serving because they just, that's the right position to be in. Just that feels right. They're serving and serving and serving. So it's once again, it's not about attainments or achieving. It's about what who I really am, who we really are, what life is. Life is serving and serving and serving and serving. It's our, that's who we are. We're eternal servants of Krishna. And complacency? I don't need a break from being who I am. The I need a break mentality is the enjoyer mentality. I've worked hard, I deserve a break. I need a vacation from devotional service. A little enjoyment, please. That's the mentality of a fruitive worker. I've worked, so now I deserve to enjoy the fruits of my work. A little vacation, please. In devotional service, there's no vacation. It's just who we are. So there's some intuitive sense of existence. And above that is being attracted, or at least desiring to become attracted to that loving exchange with Krishna. You know, the heart's ultimate desire is to love and be loved. I want that above anything else. So this is where the platform of steadiness is, nishtha, steadiness, steady faith, is bountifulness or adversity, doesn't matter. It's the loving relationship with Krishna. Obstacle, doesn't matter. Encouragement, that's nice. Encouragement, no encouragement. Whatever, it's my relationship with Krishna. Because in this world, there's going to be duality. There's going to be this kind of times, and there's going to be that kind of times. And devotional service isn't created or stopped by circumstance. So when one has accepted, in the beginning, there's other motivators, four categories: relief from distress, curiosity, economic betterment, inquisitive about the truth. And beyond that is, it's my position to serve Krishna. And I want not only to establish, I want the loving relationship with Krishna. So where's the complacency factor? Oh, I've achieved something. That when attention goes there, it's gone away from that relationship with Krishna. Unless one can simply appreciate Krishna's, look at Krishna's kindness. He places this, he places that. It's all his greatness. It's all his. But when one's mind doesn't get distracted by that stuff, when the relationship with Krishna is, that's right at the front, forefront of consciousness, the goal, as is indicated here. And we'll cover this somewhat next time also. Okay, is that whoever wrote this, did that take time? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, in the beginning of the lecture, you were talking about how we cannot experience being loved without giving that, even if it's there.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about a few people that I know of who have never experienced love growing up, and to such people, they're unable to give love, and no matter how much love is.
And even if they're put in contact with a loving relationship,
yeah.
A, they don't recognize it,
yeah.
And B, they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. So,
and they, the tendency is either to just freeze or go the other way, because they don't know how to process it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to. But, and then another response is to be stunned by it. But still not. So, one could. So, to receive, that. So it's. The answer to the thing, to your question is just. It's like getting warm. Just stand near the fire. And appreciate, wow, that's getting hot. Getting warmer and warmer, and so that's what fire is, it's warmth. So then the heart can open. And when one gives, one just takes that little step of giving, then so much enters. We're on this afternoon's topic again. It's okay. It's an important topic. Something else? Is that okay with how to address yourself to those individuals? Is first step is learn how to give and receive love yourself. That's the first mandate, and then. This unconditionally just extend yourself to that individual without any expectation, and allow Krishna's magic to work. Let them process that. To the point where they want to reach out and express some gratitude. And when that genuine expression of gratitude, not the dutiful one, where they thank you. That mechanical, because that's the behavior that they've learned is thank you. You know, there's no feeling involved with that. So that when the feeling of thank you, of gratitude comes, then so much will enter into the heart. Then they can receive. So it's soften the heart, open the heart, and so once receiving, maybe, you know, the sequence that I expressed is not complete. There's the receiving, the softening of the heart, but then the fullness, to the degree that we can give, we can receive. When I was a young boy, I used to play with some Christian statement, the statement that it's better to give than to receive. And I, being a little clever kid, would then add another adage, that variety is the spice of life. But loving exchange, there's no keeping score. It's just giving. And when it is able to be in that position, I mean, one of the themes for the weekend is appreciation of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, and it's certainly the platform that he has taught, and it's certainly the platform that he's on. Just giving and giving. His body's a wreck, and all he's thinking about is serving and serving and serving. And laughing about how others have to serve that useless body. Although it's racked with pain, and, you know, he'll laugh and say, I can't even dance. The big smile. Can't even dance. I have to dance. I can't enjoy. Yeah. But just giving and giving. So that's love. Then we can experience. So to get onto the platform of unconditional giving, that's when one can receive. So it's not okay. Yesterday was conditional and today is conditional, unconditional. It doesn't move like that. But there is certainly a decision. Let me let go of this baggage of all my wants and move to the position of serving without conditions. And when Krishna, Vishnu, is the object, back to the lesson of this little section of the of Bhagavatam, when Vishnu or Krishna is the object, then one can experience that. Reawakening of loving relationship with God. And that one can, the relationship that one has with worshipping this deva or that devi for one's exams, It's not a loving relationship. It's not the same. Just not the same. Like the question that Arun asked yesterday about approaching approaching a demigod for increasing one's loving relationship with Krishna. May I come to that position? Especially the line of disciplic succession is that channel. So the representatives of that disciplic succession are the best deliverers of that. That's their function, that's their service. That's their message, that's their whole being. That's what they do, that's who they are. And best to repose such prayers there. Anything else? Yes.
What are the occupied material desires with the intention of pleasing devotees?
Can you give an example?
So for instance, professionalist architecture.
Okay. Yes. But then it's not, then you, what you can spiritualize such a desire. That it's, that it doesn't, the phrase that Bhaktisiddhanta uses, dovetailing. There's a material desire and there's Krishna's service. And you combine the two. Bhakti Tirtha Swami likes dancing. You can dance for Krishna. Somebody likes music. Make music for Krishna. Somebody likes family. Make a family for Krishna. Lord Brahma wants to create a universe. Create a universe for Krishna. But then it spiritualizes the desire such that the buzz, the perk, the what I want from this fades in significance. Just disappears in favor of for Krishna. But the initial step is I want. I material desire. My happiness is and there are certain material desires that don't fit. But even Prabhupada on several occasions told the story of one thief who was hearing some Bhagavad Katha, and he heard that Krishna has so many jewels. So he inquired from the Katha reciter, where does Krishna live? Without disclosing his motive. Oh, he lives in Vrindavan. He said, Bodha, you can find him. He smiled. So he went to Vrindavan, bought a ticket, looking for Krishna so he could steal his jewels. And he was so eager to see Krishna. Krishna came before him. So he flattered Krishna. Oh, you are so beautiful. Such nice smile. Such a beautiful young boy. And you have such nice jewels. Would you like to give me some of those jewels? And Krishna said, oh no, Mother Yashoda wouldn't approve. Please. So by his attraction to Krishna, when Krishna gave him the jewels, he gave the jewels back because his heart had been cleansed just by seeing Krishna. And when describing the rasoham apso kaunteya, Krishna's the Prabhupada indicated that one can experience Krishna in any condition of life. In living in the Bowery, Prabhupada has had his experience, share of experience with alcohol, bums. So as he was describing this, I was envisioning Prabhupada stepping over as he came down the steps of his apartment, stepping over, you know, intoxicated, drunk bum. So if the wino is thinking, the taste of my wine is Krishna, and he simply thinks like that, that he can become purified thinking. God realization is Not so difficult. But Krishna is all through it, is the idea. I like connecting our thoughts with Krishna in a earnest way. Even our objective may not be, I want to have established my relationship and to reawaken that experience of a loving relation with Krishna. Just become attracted to Krishna somehow. But, so yes. Make sure that, but then the condition is, the qualifying condition is, one should be careful to execute occupational service with faith in God in the proper way. And that will lead one gradually on the progressive march back to Godhead. So, in the proper way means you need that one needs guidance. One needs to hear the pure message, unadulterated pure message regularly, and call out feelingly Krishna's holy name. And then carefully consider how I can do this for Krishna. Strengthen the attraction for Krishna and through the association of devotees and sadhana practices. And then the practical application is that desire to connect this effort, this tendency that I have, inclination that I have for work, for enjoying, connected to Krishna's service. And by that meditation, Krishna will open not just one door, but many, many. In other words, not only the architectural opportunity of designing a temple for Krishna, but even in your professional work, many, many ways of how professional work can be for Krishna. Many, many, many ways. If that desire is there, many doors open. This is actually God's creation, not somebody else's. And so, certainly seems to me that architecture, for one, is a profession that one can, a deeply God-conscious, skilled architect can be absorbed in a world of devotion for Krishna. Even the world around them is people thinking otherwise. That takes spiritual strength, but where there's spiritual strength, the opportunity is there. Yes.
Well, what does taking strength from instructions mean? How one can do that?
Those are two different questions. Energetically, it's just like this other example of standing near fire. What does it mean to get warm? Well, you feel warm. You feel energized. Yesterday I was being asked on the car ride back to the temple, what was it like being with Prabhupada? So I was trying to chant my rounds. So I tried to make an essence message. The essence message was, being with Prabhupada was like experiencing spiritual energy with great, great versatility and great love. This being in Prabhupada's presence was, I don't know, a dynamo. He was spiritually just radiating, just being in his presence, what to speak of and whatever it was that he said, it just moved you like, and he didn't even have to speak anything, just be there. And so you felt energized, spiritually uplifted, cleansed, humble, insignificant. So, saying through his spiritual instructions. And if our heart is open, we can experience those things. So the how-to has been also discussed. The heart has to be open. The message from yesterday afternoon's discussion was respect. What's the point of receiving instructions when there's no respect for the instruction or the instructor? It goes nowhere. Maybe it's information. Mm-hmm. And that's a maybe. And for the most part, we pick and choose information because, you know, I'm so important because of ego and lack of respect, lack of the humble position of the one who's inquiring about spiritual knowledge or taking guidance and training. So fundamental how-to item in receiving spiritual strength from instruction is to have a proper regard for the instructor. And formalities don't work. Or I should say, formalities are insufficient. The essence is not in the formalities. Although formalities should be there, training should be in etiquettes and protocol, but it's really the relationship. The condition of heart that one has. Okay, so then that begs the next intelligent question or, you know, thoughtful question. How does that respect and proper regard come? It's a gradual unfolding thing of a relationship, establishing relationship and entering into that relationship. There's the rational component doing its thing, unavoidably. We're assessing, is this a relationship that I can trust? And then it's incumbent upon us to make sure we have the right set of criteria, not an imagined set of criteria. And when our experience and the standard set of criteria match with that instructor, and, you know, the instructions haven't been changed, then one can experience. I had, when I was in Minneapolis, I had an interesting discussion with one fellow, one very nice man, who it was working the other way around. He was having an experience, but it wasn't based on any standard interesting mix of adulteration. So the faith and trust that's necessary, the openness of heart that's necessary, should be based upon standard descending authority. One rule that Prabhupada gave, Prabhupada had a way of making things so simple. The best leader is the best follower. Simple. So we can look to Srila Prabhupada's fidelity, his faithfulness to the order of his spiritual master. That says a lot, doesn't it? The order of his spiritual master threw him across the ocean at 70 years of age. Just to endure all kinds of hardship and difficulty and for the order of his spiritual master. Like I was speaking last night in appreciation of Bhakti Thirumaraj, risk his life for the order of his spiritual master. And many such devotees just and gave to give one's whole life doesn't mean necessarily become a sannyasi. Give one's whole life means give one's whole life. Manasa deha geha yogi jiva. Give factually, dedicate everything. So such follower is a qualified leader. There will be spiritual potency in that instruction, in their instructions. Because they're not only repeating the words, but it's with realization. Prabhupada described people are mad after my books. Why? Because they're written from realization. He said like that. When he would read the books, he would comment, these are not written by me. Mm-hmm. Krishna dictated, So, it's not like all the time he was speaking that way, but those were some highlights of things that he would say. He understood himself as simply a humble instrument of the message of disciplic succession. Where one's body, mind, and words are dedicated because the soul is committed to the message of the disciplic succession, that instructor is a person whose message one can give all confidence in what one's heart is completely open to. Then, you know, there are other conditions where there are persons who are striving earnestly. One can see that in their conduct, in their character. So that's another standard or set of criterion for opening one's heart, and when that heart is, it's the same point as Prema Trangani's question of when there's a giving, then there's a capacity for receiving. You take a step toward Krishna, he's ready. The spiritual potency within instructions, it's there. Using Prabhupada's phrase, I may be imperfect, but if I'm speaking the words of a perfect person, my speaking is perfect. So that's another, are the words spoken in keeping with the perfect person's, Krishna's words. And then in a similar mood. Specifically, a compassionate mood. As opposed to a hit you over the head with a stick mood. You know what I mean? I have an issue with people who take something that's pure, like Prabhupada's teachings, and use it like a stick to whack people. That's abusive. I don't like that. So that's where that last comment is coming from. So then there's something, some value in the instruction, and you know, one may want to keep some distance from that person holding the stick. But when there's just in a mood of compassion, of selfless service to another, then there's enormous the asset of the instruction becomes so much more valuable. Anything further? Yeah?
But how does one avoid beating somebody with that stick? When you see somebody, or you know, in my own experience, when I've been told, or I know it, just want to quote Shastra or something.
And you may very well do the same thing yourself. I mean, that's where your question is coming from, right?
Yes.
Well, my thought is going to the golden rule, which is as you would want done to you, put yourself, you know, vicariously put yourself in the other person's position and do unto them as you would have someone do unto you. If you want things to be different in the world, then be that which you want the world to be, rather than rah rah rah, did they do this, da 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 da. So you just dug yourself into the boat of ignorance, and the world's the same. So be that which you, so as strong as your desire that this should not be done to me, let that be a check to make sure that I do not do this to others. And then there's the, you know, the unsteadiness with that thought. Sometimes I'm very keen on thinking that thought, and sometimes I'm just like being expedient. I gotta get something done, so I gotta move on to the next thing, and so gotta get out the stick. Now, the example that I gave in the car yesterday was Prabhupada using strong language. I mean, chest. Experience with Prabhupada that I was relating was, I can't even remember what Prabhupada said because it was, I just blacked out. It was so heavy. I don't just remember the energy was, Prabhupada is really angry. And then as soon as the person who he was disciplining deliberately left the room, it changed like that. He didn't continue in this, it just gone. So it was purposeful. Whatever the reason, I don't know, and I don't need to know. But by his discretion and discrimination, that person needed to be strongly dealt with because they were way off. And there was, the relationship was such he could do that, the person could take it, otherwise he wouldn't do it. He did it because he knew they could take it and they needed it, so he did it. He didn't hold back. And then it was gone. He wasn't controlled by that. He was using that. So there was a stick, and he whacked person. But it was with love. It was discipline based upon love. And Prabhupada wasn't like a heavy disciplinarian. Anyway, so each person has their style, but when there is discipline to be used, it should be very carefully considered the nature of the relationship. And one person wrote to me, Maharaj, you never chastise me. Is that because you think I can't take it? Because if I said, yes, I think you can't take it, then they would be devastated. But that's the right answer. When what is you're in control of your faculties, you only use discipline when it's the person can take it. And I've also had the experience where sometimes that comes out and it surprises me. There's some words of discipline when my intelligence would normally say, don't do that. Sometimes it just comes out. It's not out of a place of anger. It's Krishna's prompting that to happen and it comes out. Like what Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj did with Mahamuni. I'm going to punch you in the face. This person who's on the deathbed, I want to punch you in the face. So you expect it in New York City maybe, but not in Nagari. I want to punch you in the face. So, inspired by Krishna sometimes. But at least in our discerning capacity, should be with discretion. This is appropriate. But it should be not only appropriate, but where there's the relationship of love. Prabhupada taught that in relation to disciplining children. I was pausing thinking, we can learn so much from about how to deal with one another by how we can deal with those who are completely dependent, like children. Because although we're adults, going back to this earlier discussion, many of us, or stronger, most of us have not had that great fortune of experiencing loving relationships, real, deep loving relationships. And so it's nice to experience that. It's nice to be able to give that. It's nice to be able to enter into a sangha of devotees where that's what the sangha is made of. Because there's a lot of other stuff going on. Even just moments of loving relationships are nice. So, in the matter of disciplining children, the teachers would ask Prabhupada, how do we manage the classroom situation? And Prabhupada's reply was, you extend love. Yes, but Prabhupada, sometimes, the children are really unruly. It's hard to have anything happen in the classroom. The children are so unruly. Love. But Prabhupada, love. And, so many times, and then, okay, love. And then once they were on that page, then Prabhupada said, and then when that is established, then you can discipline. Because they were not coming from a place of love. They were coming from control. Behavior modification, not love. and there were, improper procedures used for discipline. And it hurt those young people indelibly, because they were helpless and trusting, this is a religious group of people, and being whacked. So then Prabhupada explained, you can, in the classroom, you can hold the stick. First is, after all of this, okay, love. Then you can hold the stick but never use it. Hold the stick means, just like holding your finger. When that relationship is there, then nothing more than that is needed. In many cases. More on that, or less? Okay, I think we'll. One more. What? You haven't asked a question, and this is our last question, because of the time.
So we're talking about selfless service as the overriding theme, mostly in these ashes tomorrow. And that would mean like expectationlessness, which you've said on many occasions. But it seems like if we're establishing deep relationships, there's items like trust that do very much involve some expectation of sheltering and things like that. So is it just eliminating some material expectations, and there's a spiritual place for expectations, or?
Well, the flawless, non-disappointment expectation position is with Krishna, and everyone else is fallible. So the selflessness is, you may have desires and expectations, but that's with Krishna. And then with others, you can communicate those other things, but it's without expectation. It's just communication. And you can continue being in your selfless service to Krishna mode while continuing to extend expectationless or, selfless service to others, supposing they don't reciprocate. Supposing they're stuck in a space temporarily or circumstantially that they want to but can't reciprocate because they're stuck. Can't because they're stuck. So then there's compassion because you understand their suffering, and then you can continue. Yet the expectation is, I expect it to stay pretty much the same way for some time. And that's okay. Now then one can make a choice. I think the person needs a little, they need a little more space. They can't be so near the fire. Because they're becoming uncomfortable. But just in a mode of service. I'll stand closer or stand further away, and I'll communicate. The right kind of communication is always valuable. Loving communication is always valuable. Even if the person is in a place where they can't even speak. If the communication, and it can even be nonverbal, but if the communication is an unconditional mode of loving service to that person, that makes an impression. Because even in the struggle that they may be going through, that's something every one of us wants. But they may not be in a position to receive it because they are not in a position to give it. They can't, the fullness they can't receive. So then each of us can make a choice. I'm advocating the choice of continuing that expectationless service. knowing that Krishna will be pleased, and let the Krishna factor work. Let me be a conduit for the Krishna factor. That's my service. Now I may, having said all that, I may choose to then get closer to other persons who can reciprocate. But I'm not going to stop. That the reason for reducing is not, I'm frustrated. The reason is that it's the better position of service to let this person have a little space. And just support them in going through what they need to go through. Maybe offer some resources. But then, you know, respect their decision. And if there's anything that's going to help them move positively, it's by a loving gesture rather than coldness. The coldness will just reconfirm, aha, nobody cares, everybody's like this. Even this person, they're like that. So then saying nothing may be taken as confirmation of coldness. So just continued statements of warmth. But that, you know, the statements of warmth may be some honest statements of, you know, I have great and deep appreciation and value of you. But I, you know, having, and you know that, because it's consistently been there. At the same time, I want to go on record, but I care about you enough to say that this particular behavior is very, it's self-harmful. So, give it some thought. How you can do something that's not going to be so self-harmful. If there's any way that I can be of some resource for you in that, let me know. So you're leaving the welcome mat at the door, maybe even the door open ajar a little bit, but you also want to make sure that they wipe their feet before they come in. And, you know, you're entertaining other Vaishnavas meanwhile, going forward in your Krishna consciousness. Where are you? You're going somewhere right now.
Yeah, many things. Then I started to start thinking about expectations I have for myself in those relationships too.
Uh-huh.
So I started to take...
Well, that's what I thought you were asking about, expectations for yourself.
Okay. I'm getting both sides.
Okay. Well, expectations of them may be an expectation for yourself.
Right. Mostly.
No, you're fruitive, I want them to go from point A to B. They're not going. I'm getting frustrated here. But there may be, you know, something that they're stuck on in point A that they may need some time, may need some trust, they may need the stronger confirmation because, you know, their signal barriers are up, that there's a trusting person over here. You can't force that. You can't force the seed to grow into a plant like that. It's going to take some time to germinate. Mm-hmm. So just continue to very carefully nurture.
So you can't expect to get rid of expectations.
You don't become a dull stone, but your expectations can be, my expectation is, this person is going to stay in this space for a while. That's That's an expectation that matches reality. Mm-hmm. And now, with that understanding of that clarified expectation, what can the next question is, what can I do? In what way can I be of service to Krishna to help this person become ready after however long it takes to move an incremental step toward Krishna? Not towards what I want, but towards Krishna. And even if you don't have an answer to that question, if that's the mood will be communicated. And it lends for a trust. This person is not trying to control me or manipulate me. The person actually cares about me. Although they may not know the answer of how to act in such a way that that care is exhibited, they care about me. And their mind may be saying something else, but their heart is saying that. So, and that's the expectation. Let me be, my expectation is that Krishna's kindness will somehow permit me to be a better, more fit instrument for him. Mm-hmm. And when my limitations get out of the way, that can happen. When my ego gets out of the way, that can happen. And until that happens, until I fix my problems, I can't be an instrument of Krishna to assist in another situation. So I've got to go back and do my homework, make my heart more pure, more free from controlling propensities, and more into the selfless service propensity. Hold. A very simple way that I often think about this kind of dynamic is, if Prabhupada was in the situation that I'm in, would the situation stay the same or would it change? Easy answer. So, what's the problem here? I'm not transparent enough. I'm not pure enough. That's something I can work on. The other situation will automatically follow that one. This is this internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. To make more of a difference in the world. The phrase that Bhaktivedanta Swami uses all the time is change agent. And he's got this global vision of being change agents. Having an army of global change agents. It can't happen without purity. Purity is the force. So the limitation is my lack of purity. Not the other person's being stuck. That's how a Vaishnava thinks. Just like Rajiv Gupta was asking the question yesterday, whenever it was, Saturday, about anger. How do I process the situation that brings anger? How do I immediately begin thinking, how can I become more pure? Because if I was more pure, this situation would change. Prabhupada's presence on the planet changed the planet. It changed in incredible ways. It changed people's lives. Completely changed people's lives by the presence of purity. So I've got to, my business is not changing people. My business is becoming pure. And then in that ego-less, there is an expectation Krishna's will should be manifest. Krishna wants that the suffering condition of living entities who are rebellious towards him changes. It's not just a matter of supplying a, you know, roadmap out of the problem, fixing people's problems. There's a reason why they got in that space, and it's, you know, it's attitude towards Krishna reasons. So how can I open that person's heart? Without purity, it's not going to happen. Without them feeling I genuinely care about them, they're not going to open their heart. Even if I gave, you know, perfect net. Purity is the force. Okay. And there, thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada.